Utina prowled nervously around the ground floor until lunchtime, nearly driven to distraction by the conflict between her need to interrogate Miki and her desire not to bother him while he was busy helping Kate, though he didn't realize the full extent to which he was doing that. With no one else around to talk to, all the younger kids out having fun and Kate's parents finishing up the last of their pre-holiday work, she was starting to think she might go a little nuts. Nall sloped into the living room while she was sitting on the couch surfing through channels, jumped up alongside her, and shoved his head under her free hand. "Pushy little thing, aren't you?" she observed with a kind of absent fondness, scratching at his ears. "Your friend's got good timing," Nall replied, ignoring the mild rebuke. "Kate looks better already. If she was the type, I'd say she's already fallen for him." Utina chuckled. "What type is Kate?" she wanted to know. "Deliberate," Nall replied. "Cautious. Not that I wonder why anymore," he added sadly. "It doesn't take her long to decide she likes someone, but you could spend a long time waiting for her to get any farther than that. But I was just watching the two of them working, and her stutter's already down to what Corwin calls the family level with him. I've never seen that happen the first month, let alone the first day." "I have," Utina said with a fond smile. "For me it took about 30 hours. Nall turned his head to look up at her, obviously impressed. "No kidding? Well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. You've got a way with people," he observed, settling down comfortably next to her, his head on her leg. "Took you about 5 minutes to wind Corwin into a knot, and that's never happened before. I was starting to wonder if he'd realized yet that girls are different." Utina looked a little sheepish. "I didn't mean to," she said. "I don't do anything differently when he's around." Nall yawned. "I know," he said sleepily. "I think that's why, actually. He's a Viking. He digs the plain dealing type." Nall stretched, yawned again. "He'll be okay." He gave her a feline wink. "Just be gentle with him, huh? It's his first time." She reddened a little and chided the dragon for even presuming, whacking him gently on the head before resuming the scratching. "Sorry," replied Nall. "Aw, man, you're putting me to sleep here," he added with a third yawn. "Let's go roust the kids out of the kitchen and get some lunch before I pass out." Utina managed to pry Kate away from her work in order to ask her where things could be found in the Hutchins' large, well-equipped kitchen. This developed into lunch preparations as a cooperative effort, reinforcing Utina's belief that they would be better off in numerous ways if they could find lodgings near WPI that contained a kitchen. Miki, meanwhile, gathered up and collated all the sheet music he and Kate had strewn across the table, with the well-meaning, if not particularly skillful, assistance of Nall. After all else that had happened to him today, Miki took the notion of a flying, talking cat who claimed to be a dragon with aplomb, very formally making the dragon's acquaintance and humoring his affectations of nobility. Between the two of them, Kate and Utina managed to produce a quite acceptable lunch of sandwiches and soup. As they sat down to it, Utina could contain herself no longer. "Miki," she said. "Hm?" Miki replied, glancing up at her. "What's the situation back home?" Miki triggered his stopwatch, noted the time, and replied, "In part of my mind, I've been trying to think of how to answer that all morning. I'm not really sure. I think everything has been going just fine, but..." He shook his head, confusion on his face. "Seeing you was like waking up from a dream, and now everything since you left the school is like trying to remember a dream I woke up from." "That doesn't make any sense. You disappeared, and suddenly no one seemed to remember you anymore. There were rumors that you'd been expelled, or quit because of some trouble with the deputy chairman, or gotten killed in an accident. No one seemed to know, or care enough to find out, and within a week it was... who? I can only remember this now, looking back at it. Miki went on, pressing a hand against his forehead as if trying to squeeze the memories into better focus. At the time, it was like a dream. Your leaving was like the way reality changes in a dream, and you don't question it because it's a dream, and it seems to make sense that things change that way. He sighed. Does that make any sense at all? I think so, Utena responded slowly. I don't think I like the sound of it, though. No, neither do I, now that I can see that it happened, said Miki. It frightens me a little. What can have affected everyone that way? It wasn't something you did, was it? I don't think so. As far as I know, all I did was open a door I wasn't supposed to open and win by losing everything, Utena replied bitterly. Miki looked puzzled. Never mind that right now. I'll tell you about it later, Utena told him, waving it away. What happened to everybody? What? Utena fell silent for a moment, then went on in a quieter tone. What happened to Anthy? Miki blinked in surprise, then frowned thoughtfully. Miss Himemia? She left the school not long after you disappeared. Utena blinked. How? Well, she just left. Packed up her things and walked out the gate, down to town, caught a train to somewhere. She came by to tell me goodbye before she went. Told me she was looking for her prince. By then I didn't know what she was talking about anymore. He smiled a little sheepishly. I offered to stand in. She told me I was sweet, a good friend, and she hoped she'd see me again someday, and then... He shrugged. She was gone. Utena sat for a moment, digesting it. You're sure she was alone? Well, no, not alone. She had Choo-Choo with her. Yes, okay, but aside from him, no one with her? What about her brother? The deputy chairman? No, he's still at the school. Though something seems to have happened to him. He seems preoccupied most of the time, frustrated about something. I've heard rumors that his engagement's on the rocks, and he may be in trouble with the trustees. Something's happened to eclipse his star. Utena got up from the table and paced to the other end of it, her face closed in thought, murmuring to herself. He's still there, and she's gone, looking for... She stopped next to Miki's seat, understanding beginning to dawn on her face, and with it a radiant smile. She's trying to find her way out, she said, trying to escape from Sephiro and find her way to me. Unceremoniously, Utena hauled Miki up out of his chair, almost making him drop his soup spoon, and hugged him jubilantly. Oh, Miki, thank you. That's the best news I could have hoped for under the circumstances. I was so afraid she'd still be trapped there at the school under her brother's thumb. But she's escaped, and she's looking for me. I guess so, said Miki, flustered. But where are we? Utena released him, his question having put a more serious look back on her face, and thought that one over on the way back to her place at the table. I'm not sure how to answer that, she finally replied. Kate, do you have a copy of that book Zoner gave me? Mine is still on Earth. Said Kate, nodding. There's a copy of the second edition in the den. I'll go get it. That's all right, Miss Caitlin, said Miki. I can wait until after lunch. Didn't I tell you to stop calling me Miss Caitlin? Makes me feel like an old spinster lady. Utena chuckled. That's our Miki. Polite to the very end. He still calls me Miss Tenjo, for crying out loud. After all we've been through together, it's just the way he is. Miki blushed a little. Well, what should I call you, then? Oh, I dunno, said Kate with mock thoughtfulness. How about our names? Nicky blushed a little more and checked his watch. Well, if you're sure, I mean, you and I have only just met. I don't want to be disrespectful. Well, we don't stand on ceremony much around here, Kate told him. After lunch, the four of them dealt with the dishes, then retired to the cozy, dark-paneled den. Utina lay sideways across the big brown leather armchair, feet dangling over one end, still working on beat to quarters, with Nall curled up contentedly on her stomach, getting scritched and sleeping off his lunch. Kate was lying on the floor, propped up on her elbows, paging through the score to the music she and Miki had been reviewing. Miki sat in the green wingback, his face thoughtful and serious, a copy of So You've Just Arrived from a Parallel Universe in his hands. He'd just gotten through the book's dedication to Werner Heisenberg, who never could make up his mind about anything. When the den door opened and Corwin entered, his clothes were further rumpled from having been slept in, but his face was clean and his hair still wet from a sound ducking in a full sink, which explained also why the collars of his two shirts were damp. "You're up early," said Utina, surprised. "I figured you were down for the day." Corwin shook his head. "Too much to do," he said. "I skewed my planned work schedule, pushing to finish up, the other thing. So now I've got this other project that I have to have done by tomorrow. I think it's going to be another long night." "Oh, well, don't work yourself too hard. It's Christmas Eve, after all." He smiled a little shyly at her concern. "Thanks. I'll try to pace myself." "You should get something to eat before you go down." "Yes, Mom," said Corwin dutifully. At last, it was his turn to make her go a little pink in the face. Nall chortled drowsily. Corwin went to the kitchen, then returned a moment later with a plastic shopping bag, whose contents he rather ostentatiously displayed. 1. Pepperoni, 3/4 complete. 1. Chunk mozzarella cheese, approximately 1 pound. 1. Loaf French bread. 2. Bottles root beer. He tied the handles of the bag together and slung it over his shoulder, grinning. A perfectly acceptable plowman's lunch. "Just as long as you don't get any armor fragments in it," Utina replied. "I'm really sorry about that." "Forget it, forget it," she said, waving a hand. "It's already healing." "Oh, sorry, how rude of me. Corwin, this is a friend of mine from my old school, Miki Kaworu." "Miki? Kate's brother, Corwin Ravenhair." Corwin turned and gave Miki a look that somehow managed to combine welcome with suspicion, then seemed to shake himself a little and extend a hand with a smile. "Hi," he said. "Drop by for the holidays, huh?" "Something like that," said Miki, shaking the offered hand. He made no comment on Corwin's facial markings. Like Kate's stutter and Nall's ability to talk, they didn't seem to faze him at all. Or if they did, he kept it to himself as he went on. "I think I'll be transferring to Caitlin and Utina's school for next term." "Really? Well, we'll see each other some, then. Now that I've got my master's cert, I'll be stopping in to visit from time to time, if Kate'll have me." "Of course," Kate told him. "I think the school probably has rules about that sort of thing, though. We'll have to check. Corwin nodded, excused himself, moved the copy of Ars Robotica, and disappeared into the elevator. Miki watched him go, an expression of perplexity on his face, and then said, "Caitlin's brother has his master's degree? He's younger than I am." "No, no, his master's certificate. It's like a driver's license for starships." "Keep reading," Utina told him. "It's all in there." "Starships," Miki repeated, raising his eyebrows. Then he shook his head and went back to reading. A few minutes later, the front door opened, then closed, and there was the sound of someone stamping snow off boots. A few moments later, Leonard appeared in the doorway from the hall, grinning broadly, his face flushed. "You guys are missing all the fun," he declared. "Come sledding before the daylight's gone." Kuchna glanced at Kate, who graduated from a smile to an actual grin, and at Mickey, who looked intrigued, but said, I'm sorry, but I don't have a coat or anything. Len looked him up and down, then shrugged. We can find you something. Come on, it'll be fun. You'll see. I need to finish my shopping, Kate said, snapping her fingers. Why don't we get Dorothy to drive us to the Galleria, Len, and we can get Mickey some things to wear while we're there. Sounds good to me, said Len. I'll go see if we can borrow Dorothy. He moved Ars Robotica, entered the elevator, and vanished below. Are you... Utna beckoned Kate a little closer and spoke in an undertone. Are you okay to go back there? Kate looked a little nervous, but she smiled and said, I'll be fine. I'll have Len, Mickey, and Dorothy with me. And anyway, she shrugged. Marty said he's gone. Utna looked dubious. Yeah, I know, but... She shrugged. Sorry, I shouldn't try to tell you what to do. You're sweet, Kate said with a smile for her roommate. I'll be fine. Anyway, she added with a wink, you can't come along. I have to shop for you. She picked up the book from where Mickey had put it down, opened to the back, and handed it to Utna. You should read this. They added it for the second edition. You'll find it useful. Utna frowned thoughtfully at the title in bold type at the top of the page Kate had opened it to. Appendix A. And your enemies have followed you here. Utna gazed quizzically at it for a few seconds, then burst out laughing. Mickey looked across at her, puzzled. She turned the page to face him, and he was enlightened. The intercom panel on the wall by the trick bookcase twittered. Kate went to it and punched a key, and Len's voice said,
Okay, it's all set. Dorothy's bringing the car around.
All right, we'll be right out, Kate replied, and punched the channel shut again. We'll be back before you know it, she said to Utna. Okay, said Utna. Kate patted her shoulder and trotted out to the hall to put on her boots. Mickey and Utna looked at each other, shrugged, and smiled. Then, becoming more serious, Utna perched Nall on the back of the chair, got up, and crossed to her old schoolmate. Listen, Mickey, she said quietly. Kate... She's really been through a rough time the past couple of days. I really appreciate you taking the time to make friends with her so soon, without even knowing what's happened to you. I think she really needed someone like you around. Mickey smiled and, to her surprise, patted her on the shoulder. It's all right, he said. I'm sure we'll get it all sorted out before too long. Anyway, Miss Caitlin seems like a very good person. He went on, knowing as he did that his wording was slightly awkward. If she's troubled, I'm glad to be able to help. And her musical abilities are remarkable, Mickey continued, his mien, like Corwin's, Utna noticed with amusement, becoming more at ease as he approached a technical subject. Once we iron out the little problems in the piece she was showing me, it ought to be quite good. Utna smiled. I'm glad you like her, she said, making Mickey's cheeks pinken a bit. Look after her. If she has any problems, make sure you get her back here as fast as you can. I don't think she will, but she might. Mickey nodded, his face serious. I'll take care of her, he said, unhesitating. Good. Utna grinned and gave him a friendly punch on the shoulder. However it happened... Even though I'm sorry it's messing up your life, I'm awful glad to have you here, Mickey. Well, I'm glad to be here in that context, he said. I'd better go. Utna nodded. Have a good time. See you when I get back, said Miki, and he picked up his music notebook and went out to the hall to join Kate. Utena settled back into her chair, arranged Nall as he had been, and returned to scratching his ears while she read the appendix to So You've Just Arrived. Kate and Miki's shopping expedition was quite successful, outfitting him fully and well for a polar expedition. And so they picked up Utena on their return, and Len returned to the lovely sledding hill behind Koopman Memorial High School with three more people for the continuation of the day's revels and 2 hours or so of daylight remaining to enjoy. There were seven of them there already. The Morgan twins, Sylvie, the Shannon twins, and their parents, Wedge Defense Force Captain Robert Shannon, a large, jovial man with short-cropped salt-and-pepper hair, and his wife, Dr. Ayaka Jirai Shannon, a beautiful violet-haired woman whose regal bearing seemed somewhat out of place in a Michelin Man parka and moon boots. Introductions were made. The giant inner tube, Utena had to wonder what in the world it could have come from, stood up in its proper orientation. It was over 6 feet high. Was rolled into position, the toboggans were unrolled again, and the rest of the afternoon passed in a blur of laughter, motion, and gleefully ignored cold. Even dignified Ayaka took a turn tumbling down the hill in the center of the tube, though her husband swore through his uncontrollable snickering that he'd accidentally knocked her into it and set it moving. Too large and heavy to slide down the hill, the tube's preferred mode of operation was to be rolled onto the slope with a hapless victim bundled into the hole in the center. By the bottom of the hill, it tended to be bouncing violently enough to eject its passenger sputtering into the soft snowbanks of the runoff area, at which point it would wobble into the banks or plow into the cyclone fence separating the runoff area from the school's snow-covered soccer pitch. At one point, though, Sylvie Daniels made a truly heroic ride, hanging on through ever more violent bounces until, at last, the tube cleared that fence with a mighty leap, only to fall onto its side upon landing in the softer, untouched snow of the pitch. This feat would become legendary in the annals of the Koopman High sledding hill. They returned, all but the Shannons, who had their own preparations to make, to 105 Morgan Lane at dusk, laughing and discussing the afternoon's highlights. Then they got cleaned up, changed their clothes, and trooped across the street for the big feed. "Well," said Martin Rose cheerfully as he was introduced to Miki, "when I said you should bring someone else's appetite tonight, too, if you could, I wasn't really expecting you to do it," he added with a grin to Utena. "I hope I'm not being a bother," said Miki, who had donned again his white and blue Otori Academy student council uniform, combed his hair, even found a rag and shined his shoes, in an effort to make as good an impression as possible. "Bah!" said Martin with a negligent gesture. "Didn't Kate tell you about our impending leftover crisis? Come, sit, eat." And so he went, sat, and ate. The Roses' traditional Christmas Eve dinners were famous for their sumptuousness, and this year's was no exception. To attempt to list all of the things on offer would be futile and probably cause severe hunger pangs, so the complete menu will be left as an exercise for the reader. They were a large and happy gathering, talkative and full of good cheer, the young ones still bearing the glow of a day's fun in the snow. Corwin appeared only a few minutes late, hurriedly washed and redressed but quite presentable, and went red in a very Sylvia-musing manner to find that the seat at the end of one side of the table, to Utena's right, had been saved for him and Nall. Kate sat on Utena's left, and Miki beside her. The seat to Miki's left had been claimed by a quick-witted Sylvie, who had promptly installed the twins next to her. Len sat at the end of that side, and Martin Rose at the head. The other side was mostly adults, Zoner, Griffin, Kay and Yuri, the Shannons, but for Achka and Tenchi Shannon, who sat next to their parents, across from Corwin and Utena to balance the table. Eiko was supposed to be sitting at the other end, but she was up and flitting about most of the time, since it was her dinner and all. "Did you finish the thing you had to do?" Utena whispered to Corwin under the hum of the jovial conversation. "Not yet," he replied, "but I'll have it done by morning. After we get done opening our one thing after dinner, I'll go back down and finish up." One thing? Utina asked. Yeah, we each get to open one present on Christmas Eve after dinner. It's a family tradition. Sounds nice, Utina murmured wistfully. Growing up, she hadn't had a family to have Christmas time traditions with. What are you guys whispering about? Sylvie inquired. Nothing, Corwin snapped, annoyed. Mind your own business. Sylvie giggled and turned her attention to the platter of stuffing, which, to her eyes, if no one else's, Guy was in danger of hogging. Sylvie, I thought I told you to lay off Corwin, said Zoner. Aw, Dad, Sylvie groaned. He's so clueless, it's funny. Like he doesn't even realize he's... Sylvie, said Yuri. Okay, okay, said Sylvie disappointedly. Shifting her mental gears, she went back to flirting blatantly with Miki, who seemed ill-prepared to deal with her. Still, no actual harm was being done, and anyway, it gave Guy a chance to eat in peace for once, so her parents let her have her fun in that regard. At one point, at around the time of the third course, roast beef with a sort of tangy potato-like vegetable called snabs, the six elders lapsed into something Griffin referred to wryly as Elder Day's Story Time, in which they told funny and embarrassing stories about each other for the amusement of the younger generation. These included the tales of Rerob Mandeville's wedding, which were always very popular, and the story of the time Zoner inadvertently brought down the governments of 12 independent systems with one erroneous post to a Usenet news group. Once the assembled company could eat no more, they scattered again with many thanks for, and armfuls of leftovers pressed upon them by, Aiko, to their respective domiciles. At 1:05, the opening of the single premature Christmas gifts was next. One by one, starting with the youngest, Guy, the children selected and opened their one allotted early gift. Guy's choice turned out to be an exquisitely detailed little transforming model of a VF-11 Thunderbolt Veritech fighter, made by his father with some help from the Experts of Justice weapons shop. As an aspiring Veritech jockey, Guy was enthralled with it, and spent the next half hour switching it from mode to mode before being packed off to bed. Priss's was somewhat odder, not a toy, but a sleek and lethal little needle-beam blaster, presented proudly by her mother, with a promise to take her out to the range tomorrow and put in some time on it after lunch. Utina cocked an eyebrow at that. The girl was, after all, only 11. But then again, this was an exceptional family, and, though grinning from ear to ear, Priss treated the weapon with all the respect it was due. Leonard was next, and the gift he chose to open seemed almost prosaic. It was a Bokuto, a wooden practice sword. But it seemed to delight Len all the same, and on closer inspection it was no ordinary Bokuto. It was beautifully carved, elaborate and ornate, its grip scaled and blade chased with a vaguely vine-like pattern, and a small scarlet gem winked from the pommel. According to the tag on the oblong package that had contained it, it was a gift from Achika Shannon. Utina noticed that Len received no ribbing from his relations about that, not even from Nall, as he bade the assembled good night and took himself off to bed, prize in hand. Nall was next. The box he selected was from Corwin's mother, and turned out to contain a small velvet bag which, upon closer examination, contained several different colored gemstones, each about the size of a large gumball. They were all quite beautiful, and Nall cackled gleefully, rolling them about with his paws for a few minutes before teasing them back into the bag. "Your turn, Corwin," said Griffin. And Corwin went and prowled the base of the tree, looking at tags, considering sizes and shapes and weights. Finally, he noticed a small box on top of a couple of others, unobtrusive in silver wrapping paper and a small red bow. He picked it up, read the tag, and then turned and blinked at Utina. She went a little pink and said, "It's not much, but..." "You didn't have to get me anything," he said, and tore off the paper to reveal a gray cardboard box about the size of a pack of playing cards. This he carefully removed the lid from, then stood gazing into for a few seconds. "Wow," he said, and removed from it a small piece of jewelry, a pin or clasp, worked into the intricate and beautiful shape of a silver rose. Corwin held it in the palm of his hand, regarding it with amazement. Then he looked up at the person who had given it to him. "It's beautiful. Thank you." "It's supposed to be a cloak clasp," Utna said, hands behind her head, with an exaggerated nonchalance that would have sent Sylvie into hysterics had she not been spending the evening at her own home for once. "But I don't know if you wear that kind of thing, so I figured you could use it for a pin or whatever." Corwin fiddled with it for a second, affixed it to the top pocket of his outer shirt, and smiled shyly. "Thank you," he said again, quieter. "You're welcome," Utna said in the same tone. "Merry Christmas." Then she grinned, shifting mental gears, and declared cheerfully, "Hey, it's Kate's turn." She went to the tree as her roommate browsed, nudged the box she and Corwin had put there earlier that day, and said, "I like this one here." Kate glanced at her, picked up the box, gave it a gentle shake. "You do you?" she asked with a conspiratorial smile. "Yeah, I do," said Utna. "Definitely that one." Kate looked around the room with that same sly smile, soliciting other votes. Corwin abstained. Everyone else nodded.
"Oh, okay," said Kate. This one."
Corwin grinned and announced, "Power on! Mazin, go!" Kate looked at him oddly, and then the box shook a little. Making a surprised little noise, Kate held it more firmly, looking from it to Corwin to Utna, who both moved a little closer, grinning. A second later, the top of the box burst up through the wrapping paper, swinging open, and Lesser Mazinger rose proudly up, standing waist-deep in the box with his fists raised in a dramatic pose.
"What the?"
Kate asked, giggling. Lesser Mazinger folded his arms and stood impressively. "Lesser Mazinger," said Corwin with a smile, "I'm sure you recognize Kate." The little robot regarded Caitlin, then nodded. Corwin felt he ought to explain what the robot was for, but couldn't come up with anything he thought was really a good explanation. When he'd originally conceived it, it hadn't had a real purpose. He just thought she would find it funny, entertaining to have around. Since yesterday, he'd added a certain level of functionality, but it wasn't the kind of thing he was going to stand around talking about on Christmas Eve, right in front of everybody. With a little luck, she would never need to know about it at all. Kate set the box down on the floor and watched, laughing, as Lesser Mazinger tore through the side of it and marched across the carpet to confront Nall. Nall took a playful swipe at him. He ducked and launched one of his tiny fists, which jumped out on a tiny puff of rocket fire and bounced harmlessly off the dragon's nose, before flying in a sweeping arc and returning to the robot's upraised arm.
"Ow!" said Nall with mock indignation. "Why, you—"
He pounced, and dragon and robot rolled across the floor in a furious wrestling match as Caitlin knelt on the floor, trembling with helpless laughter. Eventually, she got to her feet, wiping tears of mirth from her eyes, and embraced her brother.
"Thank you, Corwin," she said. "I know he'll be a lot of fun to have around, just like you."
"He's useful, too," Corwin said. "He can carry small objects and record things he sees and hears." "Hey, you can send him to student council meetings in your place, then," Utna said, grinning. Nall and Lesser Mazinger finished their wrestling match over near the kitchen archway and returned, the robot sitting triumphantly astride the dragon's back. "Well," said Corwin as he surveyed his creation at play with a satisfied grin, "back to the salt mines. If I don't get busy on my other project, it won't be ready for morning." "Didn't you pull an all-nighter last night, too?" asked Griffin, a note of concern in his voice. "Yeah, but it's cool. I got a few hours of sleep this afternoon, and Dorothy can keep me awake." Griffin considered this, nodded. "Don't miss stockings in the morning," he said with a smile, and tagged his son's shoulder affectionately as the black-haired boy bade goodnight to everyone and went past him en route to the den and the elevator.
"Now for the guests," said Kay with a grin.
Miki said hesitantly, concerned about the appropriateness of butting in this way. No one gave him a hard time, so he decided it was okay and held out a small, flat, rectangular package, neatly wrapped in green foil paper.
"If it's all right, this isn't exactly new, but I'd like you to have it, Utna."
Utna looked at him, puzzled for a moment, then took it from him.
"Thanks, Miki," she said. "You didn't have to."
She tore away the paper, then gasped. The object she held was a picture frame, 5 inches by 7 and rather ornate, its face featuring a border of wrought black metal in the style of a trellis with neatly enameled rose blossoms at the corners. Though it was quite lovely, it wasn't what she was gasping about. Inside the frame was a photograph, which Kate leaned over a bit to get a look at. It was a snapshot, not a posed portrait, of a pretty, dark-skinned girl with violet hair done up in a tightly bound halo, and wide green eyes behind big, thick glasses. She was wearing what looked like the white blouse, green skirt, and red tie of a school uniform, and had been caught kneeling in a garden with a golden watering can in her slender, elegant hands, tending a rosebush with a private smile on her face. Obviously, she was unaware that she was being photographed. Utna looked up from it to Miki, disbelief on her face.
"Miki," she murmured.
Then, in a slightly stronger voice,
"Miki, I can't take this from you."
"Of course you can," Miki replied. "It's the only one available right now, and you've a greater right to it, and a greater need for it, than I."
"But," she protested.
"You'd refuse a Christmas gift?" Miki inquired, tripping his watch with a patient smile. "Anyway," he added wryly, "sometime when the Photoshop isn't closing in 5 minutes, you can have a copy made for me." Utna gave him a long, hard look, and then smiled, a little sadly, in return, holding the framed photograph against her heart.
"Thank you, Miki," she said softly.
"You're welcome," he said. "Merry Christmas, Utna." Utna gave the photo a lingering look, then put it in her jacket pocket, and laughed as Nall and Lesser Mazinger started a little game of soccer with one of Nall's gemstones.
"I guess," Miki observed, "that just leaves you, Mr. Hutchins, Mrs. Morgan."
"Not quite," said Griffin. "You get one too, you know."
"Oh, no, that's all right," Miki protested. "You've all been so nice to me already, taking me in and buying me clothes when I barged into your home uninvited and—"
"Kid," said Kay in a tone of mock severity, "after what you've done for Kate just by barging in, I'm half tempted to marry you, or at least adopt you. You and Utna both," she added with a smile for the girl she had been threatening to kill only a day earlier. "Now shut up and open a present before I clobber you one," she ordered Miki, with a broad grin so that he, inexperienced with her moods and manners, would know she was joking.
"Have I really done so much?" Miki wondered.
Griffin put an arm around Kate and hugged her fondly, kissing the top of her head. "I wasn't sure we'd be able to get her to smile at all today, but thanks to you two, she's hardly stopped. I owe the two of you more than I can say."
"Oh, Dad,"
Kate said, blushing embarrassedly and giving her father a playful thump on the chest.
"Well," said Miki, who was looking a little pink himself, "I'm glad I've been able to help."
He went to the tree and looked around. There wasn't much there for him. He'd only been here since this morning, after all. But he was surprised to find several items nonetheless. After a bit of consideration, he chose a largish, flat package which, when opened, revealed a book of sheet music.
"It's the piano concerti of Drevlak of Malastare," Kate explained. "He's largely ignored by
modern musical scholars, but I think his work was quite extraordinary. Miki looked through the book with a quick and critical eye, smiled at what he saw, and tucked the book under his arm. "I'll enjoy this very much," he predicted. "Thank you, Caitlin." "Merry Christmas, Miki," said Kate with a smile. Utina grinned to herself as she crouched catcher-style over the game of gemstone soccer and occasionally interfered with it just for fun. Kate's parents made their selections, too. Griffin opened a package from Kate that turned out to be a large, imposing book on the history of a type of automobile Utina had never heard of. He was delighted with it, remarking repeatedly how comprehensive it looked to be and how nice the photography was. Kay's selection was from her husband and proved to be rather ordinary by this gang's standards, a new pair of Chuck Taylor sneakers. The redhead rejoiced in them nonetheless, remarking that her old pair was just about used up, but she hadn't replaced them because she was hoping someone would get her a pair for the holiday. It struck Utina that that was a perfectly normal thing for a person to do, and how odd it seemed to see these people acting like everybody else, and how refreshing that was, and it occurred to her that she might be getting a little tired in a warm, happy, glowy sort of way. "Well," said Griffin, "I'm for bed, I think. Lots to do in the morning." "Yeah," Kay agreed. "You guys don't have to sack out right away if you don't want to. You're big kids now," she added with a grin. "But you should probably turn in before it gets too late, because Sylvie has a tendency to get the whole house up when she comes over on Christmas morning." "Could I trouble you for a blanket or two and maybe a pillow?" Miki asked diffidently. Griffin slapped his forehead. "Don't! I was going to open up one of the spare rooms for you. I'll do that now." "No, really, I don't mind the couch." "We can sort something out," Kate assured her father. "You go on to bed." She glanced at her watch and smiled. "We've got just enough time to make the midnight mass at St. Michael's." Griffin gave her a hug and kiss with a nostalgic grin. "Just like your grandmother," he said. "Have a good time, love. Be careful on the train coming home." Kate smiled. "We'll be careful." "Good night, then," he said. "See you all in the morning." And he was gone upstairs. Kay lingered for a moment, and as Miki and Kate went to put on their shoes and Utina stood taking another look at the picture Miki had given her, she said, "Listen, Utina." Utina looked up, put the picture away, and said attentively, "Yes, Mrs. Morgan?" Kay smiled tiredly. "Okay, first off, quit calling me that. It makes me feel like a Hausfrau. Though you got my name right this time, that's something," she added with a wry grin. "Sorry," said Utina. "It's just... takes a little getting used to." "Yeah, I guess," said Kay. Then, becoming more serious, she went on, "Look, I just wanted to say I'm sorry about last night. You were right, I was wrong, and I didn't even bother to apologize for threatening you, let alone thank you for standing up for what was right. You're a guest in my house. More than that, you're so close to Kate, you're part of my family. I had no right. I was out of my mind with rage and grief, but that's no excuse. There is no excuse for pointing a weapon at my daughter's best friend." She hung her head. "I'm ashamed of myself. I just wanted to make that clear to you." Utina smiled. "Believe me, Mrs. Kay, I know how you felt. When you asked me why I let him live, well, I know why, but I don't think I'll ever know how I managed to stop myself." "Like Zoner said, you understood. Better than me. For that moment, you loved Kate better than I did." Utina blinked in shocked surprise. I don't know if I'd say that." "I would," Kay replied firmly. She put her hand on the girl's shoulder. "Or at least this. You were a better friend to her than I was." I don't know where you and your friend Miki came from, but Kate's lucky to have you in her life. Thank you, said Utena, not knowing what else she could say to a statement like that. That's all, said Kay, grinning. Maudlin time's over. She removed her hand, then clouted Utena's shoulder with it and headed for the stairs. Good night, Utena. Good night, Kay, said Utena, without the hesitation this time. Grinning a little grin of her own, she went to join Kate and Miki. Bundled up against the cold, Nall tucked into the front of Utena's overcoat with his little head sticking out between the top and second buttons, they walked down the lamplit street, their boots crunching on newly fallen snow. It was still coming down, not hard, just enough to make the night picturesque, and as they turned the corner from the Morgan Lane loop onto Rush Boulevard, the glittering towers of downtown came into view, frosted with the halo of the falling snow. Miki had seen it during the day, of course, but at night it was a whole different spectacle, and he paused, gasping, just to take it all in. Cool, isn't it? Utena said with a knowing grin. I never knew there could be anything like it anywhere. Nor I, Miki breathed. Incredible. Kate turned, her hands folded in front of her, and grinned at them, bouncing slightly on the balls of her feet. After a few moments, Miki pulled himself out of his reverie and started walking again, and the four of them went down to the corner and the Crescent End Station. There they caught a Gold Line train into town, transferred to the Purple Line, and got off two stops past City Center / Entire State Building at the Cathedral stop. It was, indeed, a cathedral, Gothic and gorgeous, smack dab in the center of the city. Buildings the size of upended warships towered all around it, but it soared all the same, its ecclesiastical glory somehow mocking the mundane corporate titans that dwarfed it. The great round stained-glass window over the main entrance depicted St. Michael the Archangel, gloriously arrayed for battle. In the middle of the night it blazed with light, and as they entered, the bells began to ring. Miki and Utena didn't really know what to do, and Kate herself was no Catholic by any stretch, but they weren't really here to worship, per se, just to take joy in the ceremony and the beauty of the surroundings, and to listen to the music, and in Kate's case, to sing. Utena noticed with amusement that Miki had the same startled but pleased reaction to Kate's sweet, stutter-free singing voice that she herself had had not too long ago. He found his place in the songbook without too much difficulty, and before long he was showing Utena where to look. Nall, an old hand at this kind of thing, didn't need it. Utena, Kate noted to herself, had a decent, if unpolished, voice. She hadn't shown any particular aptitude with musical instruments or theory in the time they'd been together, but perhaps this was something that could be cultivated. Kate filed it away for later consideration, and returned her full attention to the music. The parish priest of St. Michael's, Father Eric O'Halloran, was a staunchly old-fashioned, rather crusty type. Kate, who came to services at his church perhaps 10 times a year, and smilingly declined his offers of spiritual counsel, knew him fairly well. He was friendly enough in his rather grumpy way, and he let her play the cathedral's great pipe organ from time to time, even though she was an unrepentant heathen, because he knew she could do it justice. He also insisted on performing the services in Latin, which Kate found pleasingly anachronistic of him. The Gold Line was all but deserted when they made their way back, breathless and euphoric, from the candlelit cocoon of St. Michael's into the brightly lit, photorealistic glare of the End's gleaming white tunnels. Utena now knew herself to be a lot tired, but still in that same warm, happy, glowy kind of way, now with the further glow of the mass layered over that. And if she wanted an extra touch of warmth, she had only to reach into her inside pocket and touch her Christmas present, and there it was. Someday. Hope and determination burned inside her, the truth of that word and all it implied echoing in her soul. Someday we'll shine together. Until then, this will be a good life. Good enough. She leaned toward Kate and asked her a question. For an answer, she got merely a nod and a smile, which was enough. They let themselves quietly into the house, locked the door behind them, took off coats and boots and the knit impedimenta of wintertime, and climbed to the second floor. In the guest room, Utina gathered up her pajamas and toiletries and said quietly to Miki, "I've been using this room, but you take it for tonight, okay?" "But then where..." "Don't worry, I'll be fine." She patted his shoulder. "Good night, Miki. Merry Christmas." "And to you, Utina," said Miki. "Good night, Caitlin." Kate smiled. "See you in the morning, Miki." Perched on Utina's shoulder, Nall yawned hugely as she shut the door to the guest room. "Man, I'm beat. Hey, you want to help me out for a second before you turn in?" "Sure," said Utina. "What do you need?" "Got to spruce up my pad a little," said Nall with a grin, indicating the little sack of gems he had slung around his neck like a St. Bernard's cask. "In Corwin's room? Are you sure he won't mind if I go in there?" "Nah, it's okay. He keeps the place pretty tidy." And indeed he did, she saw as she slipped inside and clicked on the overhead light. It was a very tidy room, especially for a 13-year-old boy's. The robot models, or were they models, given Lesser Mazinger, on the shelves all neatly arranged and clean, the bed with its black and silver coverlet nicely made, the books straight and even on the shelves. "Right there, on the bedside table," said Nall, pointing with his snout. Utina looked and laughed out loud, though quietly, to avoid waking the others. There on the bedside table was a heap of coins, mostly quarter credits with some U.S. coinage from trips to Earth, and a number of N and Dream Machine video arcade tokens, interspersed with the occasional gem and crystal. Corwin had been telling the truth. Nall did indeed sleep on a dragon's treasure hoard, one scale to his stature. Smiling and occasionally yawning, Utina and Kate spent a couple of minutes helping the dragon integrate the new gems into his pile. Once he was satisfied, he turned around three times, curled into a ball, and said sleepily, "Good night, you guys. Merry Christmas." They bade him good night, then went upstairs to Kate's room. Kate went into the bathroom, brushed her teeth, and changed into her pajamas. When she emerged, she saw Utina by the desk, standing the photo Miki had given her on one of the shelves above it. Lesser Mazinger, standing on that same shelf, regarded it with folded arms for a moment, nodded, and then took up a post next to it, standing at attention, as if guarding it. "That's your rose bride, I take it?" asked Kate quietly, coming to stand beside and a little behind her roommate. "Mm-hmm," said Utina softly, nodding. "That's Anthy." "She's lovely," said Kate. Utina glanced at her, smiled a little wistfully. She looks better without her glasses, too, with her hair down." Kate considered this, nodded. I can see that." "And someday," Utina went on softly, "someday soon, God willing, you'll meet her. And you'll be friends, great friends. I just know it. You're a lot like her in some ways," she added with a smile. "You have the same compassion, the same inner light, the same quiet strength." She trailed off, looking down at her fist, at the little scar on her third left finger where she had once worn a ring. "You'll like her," Utina said, with a hint of desperation in her voice, almost as though she were pleading rather than predicting. I'm sure I will, said Kate, and from her it was an affirmation, not a dismissal. Utina took it for what it was and brightened tiredly, then went to brush and change. Silently, they turned off the lights and climbed into Kate's big bed from either direction, lying side by side in the dark and quiet. "Kate?" asked Utina suddenly.
Hmm? Kate replied. This kind of thing could get misunderstood pretty easily. Your parents, the others, I just realized. Are you sure you don't mind?
Kate reached across the small space between them and took Utina's hand.
It doesn't matter, she said simply. Far as I'm concerned, they can all think whatever they like. We know the truth.
The statement rang in Utina's mind. She smiled, squeezed Kate's hand, then released it and curled up on her side for sleep.
Merry Christmas, Kate,
Utina murmured, already on the point of drifting away with the warm contentment of a long, full, well-played day.
Merry Christmas, Utina,
Kate replied, curling up the opposite way with Seven in her arms. Back to back, like mirror images, each a reassuring warmth guarding the other's back, they slept and dreamed of days to come, of old friends and new ones, of the strength of numbers and the needlessness of struggling alone, of truth. Undocumented Features, Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword, Second Movement, Christmas Rose, was presented by Aerie Productions Unlimited. The symphony will return with A Rose for the New Year.